Committee on Rules for February 15th, 2010. We're going to open without a quorum for the purposes of conducting public hearings. We'll not go, obviously, in work session until we have a quorum. I'm going to open a public hearing on SB 998. Could the committee administrator give an overview?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 998 modifies the date that the Secretary of State is to submit report to the Legislative Assembly regarding the cross-nomination system for candidates for public office. And we have a Dash 11 amendment before you, which does a number of statutory changes to bills we passed last session. There is also a handout from the Secretary of State's office that walks you through that amendment, and they will go through the amendment in detail.
Detail.
Okay.
Mr. Trout?
Yes.
Mr. Trout from Secretary of State's office. As Mr. Trout is coming forward to explain the bill, the amendment to the bill, just state for the record that this is sort of an omnibus change bill, which we've tried to keep with as little controversy as possible, with a very big relating clause. Please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Steve Trout, Director of Elections. And I appreciate the chair providing us the opportunity to include these, what we consider technical cleanups through this bill. We've got a number of things that are just cleanups of some language from the last session, and then also some things related to online registration and others that we needed to get implemented here this calendar year. And so I appreciate the opportunity to present this. I'll just go through sections briefly, and if you have questions, we can go into more detail. Section 2 of the amendment is adding online registration to allow that up until 11:59 on the 21st day, the close of registration. Simply to set a time date for the online system, and so 11:59 makes it consistent with other electronic transmissions that we have, and felt that was the best deadline to put in place. Section 3 gives counties the ability to not update address information from the National Change of Address forms when they know it's incorrect, because of the timing of many of the receipt of those postcards. Often we have registrations that are more current than the date of that change of address form that gets mailed back to us, because they do it in batch form, and sometimes it takes 3 or 4 months for us to get that information. And so sometimes it's clear to the clerks that we have a more recent dated registration form that has more current information, and so this just gives them the ability to use the most current information. Section 4 amends 250.048 relating to the circulators of petitions. This is really just a timing issue, because the way it's currently written, it may require those people circulating recall or referendum petitions to have to come forward and re-register as a circulator, because currently the deadline for their certification is 4 months before Election Day, which is fine for initiatives, but for recall and referendum, which may be taking place after that, we needed to be able to allow them to continue to circulate without having to re-register and potentially costing the validity of some of those signatures. Section 5 amends 253.690. We were able to get the fax voting bill through last year, and so this really just brings our state law into compliance with federal law, specifically with the MOVE Act that was just passed by Congress this last year, which allows overseas voters to be categorized as well as spouses and dependents as long-term absent electors. It also brings it into compliance with the way our centralized database works, in order to track those that should be entitled to receive those early ballots, military and overseas. Section 6, this fixes the Measure 56 double majority issue that I believe the chairman put this in, and so if there's any questions there, I'll defer to the chairman. Section 7, again, last session we increased the voter pamphlet fee amounts, And so what this does is it raises the threshold for those committees that would have to file as a committee in our Orastar system, so that those that aren't running high-budget campaigns would be able to pay their filing fee, their voter's pamphlet fee, and the fee for a picture without having to formally form a committee and have to go through all the filing requirements there. So we raised it. It was $350. We raised it to $750 to reflect those increases in fees that we are charging for the statements. Section 8, amending 260.055 regarding the intent to discontinue campaign committees. Currently, the way the system's set up, it sets up a continuous loop that a campaign may never be able to get out of, and which would continue to add fees and fines and issues there. So this provides a way to so that they won't be penalized for correcting things and allows them a way actually to discontinue the campaign when there is some filing or fine or penalty that is assessed as part of that as part of that final transaction. Section 9, amending 260.407, really just changes some language to make it consistent throughout the section, removing campaign as a descriptor of expenditure. We had it both ways in that section. Section 10 adds all committee types to the list of those that are not permitted to use campaign funds to pay civil penalties when it's when those funds are used transferred for personal use. Currently, that only applies to campaign committees or to candidate committees, and so this is just treating them all the same. Section 11 deals with the new checkoff boxes on the income tax forms. Because Department of Revenue requires that information on the tax forms be kept confidential, we don't have a way to track those individuals who made those $3 contributions. We can't have anonymous contributions, so this creates an exception to that for this $3 contribution, but it also allows the political parties to be able to accept the funds that are donated, whereas currently we think that that would be a violation because they would be trying to accept an anonymous contribution. And then, so that's Section 11, and then Sections 12, 13, and 14 deal with the drawing of precincts. We had a bill last year that that changed the way that precincts were drawn. This rolls it back to the way that it was previously, but also allows or requires our office to issue a directive after each census with respect to redistricting, issue a directive to those counties, cities, districts, anyone that draws lines for districts to be able to, we would issue a directive instructing them on basic, you know, constitutionally tested principles that are similar to the ones that are used for legislative lines, and so that we can have cleaner districts and fewer island and small issues. So with that, Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions, I can go into further detail on any of those points, but we believe they're all you know, simple corrections and fixes, and haven't heard any opposition from any of the parties.
Any questions from the committee?
Yes. Thank you. A couple of questions. Apologize for a few minutes tardy. Could you explain to me the dash 5, the increase of the threshold for candidates to 650?
Okay.
One more time, please.
So in Mr. Chairman, to Senator Atkinson, for the increase, we had an increase last year for the voter's pamphlet fees, doubling those in many instances. And so the increase of this is to allow campaigns like judges, others that aren't really out campaigning, to be able to raise enough money to be able to spend enough money to cover their voter's pamphlet, their filing fee, and a picture for the voter's pamphlet without having to go forward and file a full campaign committee under ORSTAR with all the reporting requirements there. So really, previously it had been 350 because of the increase in the voters pamphlet fees. We raised it there so that they would still be able to do those things without crossing that threshold and having to file as a full committee.
Thank you. Another question, Mr. Chair. Is fax voting legal now?
Yes. Yes, that was part of legislation that was passed last year that this body passed. We used it for the first time in this January 26th election. We had a few ballots come back that way. There are not very many. We didn't receive very many because what we hear is there aren't a lot of fax machines out there in the field. We're working with the different military folks and the generals in the National Guard to try and improve our outreach to them to make sure that they have an opportunity to vote. But currently, where there are faxes available, those overseas and military voters are able to fax ballots back.
You have any, how many there were total? Five.
My understanding of from this January 26th special was it was a handful, less than a dozen, statewide.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else to testify on this bill? If no one, I will close the public hearing, and I'm going to go to work sessions a little bit later. I'm going to open a public hearing on SJR 48A. Senator Prusansky, Mr. Campbell, with forward. And will the committee administrator give a brief overview?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. SJR 48 proposes amendment to Oregon Constitution to permit serving judge to be employed by the State Board of Higher Education, School Board, or Community College District Board for the purpose of teaching, specifies that such employment does not prevent person from serving as judge, refers proposed amendment to people for approval or rejection at the next general election. The measure comes to you from your Senate Education and General Government Committee on a 5-0 vote.
Please proceed, Senator Prusansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. SJR 48 should have seemed familiar to you. You had what was SJR 4 this last regular session. This is a creation of that bill when after it passed out of the Senate on a 28-1 vote. It went over to the House, and due to the timing that when it was received, the part of the leadership there felt that it was being pushed too quickly, and that they wanted some time to think about it, and they suggested that the bill be brought back, or the resolution be brought back during February. So here it is. And the only change since this committee saw this bill before was that we had a contact from the community colleges who asked that they also be included so they would have the option to have judicial judges to be able to go forward. And for the record, it's Floyd Prusansky, State Senator, District 4, Lane and Douglas counties, and to my right is Kevin Campbell, who is the lobbyist advocate for the Oregon Circuit Court judges.
Any questions for Senator Prusansky or Mr. Campbell? Do you wish to state?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chair Devlin, members of the committee. For the record, Kevin Campbell, representing the Oregon Circuit Court Judges Association. Appreciate Senator Prusansky sponsoring this measure, and we fully support it.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
One question.
Yes.
We talked in the hall about, with another Campbell, that judges could not be involved in administration, just teaching. In the lines of the resolution, are they able to consult? Or is it just teach?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, my reading of this on line 13, it says for the purpose of teaching, and it says an employment by the higher ed. I do not see where it says anything about consulting. The framing there, as well as on line 15, and the intent of the of the sponsor is to allow them to actually get into the classroom and teach.
Important clarification for the record. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Senator Prusansky or Mr. Campbell? Seeing none, thank you both for
thank
being here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay.
Close that public hearing. Open open a public hearing on SB 1043.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1043 allows legislative staff to explain vote of member of Legislative Assembly on measures referred to voters. It has an emergency clause, declares an emergency effective upon passage. We had a very, very brief public hearing on the 4th, and it's brought back before you today.
Is there anyone here to testify on the measure?
Nope.
Okay. Going once?
Right, you and Ted go down there and testify. I'll run the gavel.
Going twice? Three times? Public hearings closed. Okay. Now we'll go to SJR 44A. I'll open a public hearing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, SJR 44A proposes an amendment to Oregon Constitution for creating a new article of the Constitution which allows the state to incur general obligation indebtedness to finance or refinance costs associated with real or personal property that is or will be owned or operated by the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon may be loaned and indebtedness incurred to finance the cost of constructing, remodeling, repairing, equipping, or refurnishing personal property that is or will be owned or operated by the state, including without limitations on facilities and systems, infrastructure related to real or personal property, or indebtedness incurred under this subsection. Refers proposed amendment to people for their approval or rejection at the next regular general election. This measure comes to you from your Senate Finance and Revenue Committee on a 3-0-2 vote.
Okay. Do you know who the two were that were absent?
It was two excused and... It was Senator Hass and Senator Telfer.
Okay. I will. Anyone to testify? Treasurer's office, do you wish to come forward to testify? Not the whole treasurer's office, but the rep.
Let's get the whole treasurer's office up here.
Chair Devlin, members of the committee, for the record, Michael Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. I won't be going over anything that hasn't been gone over in revenue, but I will be glad to put this on the record for the Rules Committee. Right now, when we manage debt for the state of Oregon, general obligation bonds are the cheapest form of debt. Currently, we have a certificate of participation program that is not general obligation. That has been growing in recent years, and we can save about a third of an interest rate if we have a constitutional authority to switch this over to general obligation. This would save us, based on what we issued last year, $38 million over the life of those obligations. And the Treasurer's Office recommends passage of this resolution to save on interest costs and more effectively run the program.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will close that public hearing. And okay, let's take just about a 3-minute recess and
coffee.
And we will come back in. I'll be realistic every time I say 3 minutes.
Say three. We'll be back in six.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody, be back. There's a lot more than three. At 8:45.
All right. I think the president was planning to come down at 9.
convene the Rules Committee for February 15, 2010, and open a public hearing on SJR 41. Could the committee administrator give a brief overview, and could the Senate President please come forward?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. SJR 41 proposes an amendment to Oregon Constitution to require annual sessions of the Legislative Assembly. We had a public hearing on February 11th, and we had briefly talked about the Dash 7 amendments, which allows a legislative session an odd number year may not exceed 135 days, and an even number year may not exceed 45 days, permits Legislative Assembly to hold a pre-session organizational session, not subject to limits of the number of calendar days permitted for a session, and prohibits action on gubernatorial vetoes, and allows legislative session to be extended by 5 days by a vote of two-thirds of the majority of the members of each chamber, refers the proposed amendment to the November 2010 general election.
Okay. Senator Courtney, Representative Boone, and Ms. Pollack. Senator Courtney, could you start?
Chair Devlin, Vice Chair Ferrioli, Senator Metzger, and Senator Atkinson, members of the Senate Rules Committee and Committee Administrator Aaron Sealer. My name is Peter Courtney. I live at 2925 Island View Drive North here in Salem, 97303. I represent Senate District 11, which includes our major portions of Salem, Jervis, and Woodburn. I come here today to speak in favor and support SJR 41. You should have a copy of my testimony, and while I'm reluctant to ever read from my testimony, particularly word for word, I'm going to be inclined to do that today just to make sure that I put on record my feelings about the measure. It's my understanding that when the Legislative Assembly first gathered for its first time in Salem in 1860, the citizen lawmakers concluded their business in 40 days. I believe that was the length of time. At least that's what the records show. And then for the next 75 years, they met every other year and never convened for more than 2 months. That was sufficient, and in the years between statehood and World War II, part-time citizen legislators could complete the people's business by attending to matters of state for 60 days or less every 2 years. As our state's population grew and the world changed, the issues coming before the legislature became more complex and took more time to address. Following World War II, legislative sessions started getting longer. The first one topped 100 days in 1949, and in 1967, the session stretched for the first time from January into June. Since 1971, and I was surprised when I discovered this a couple of years ago, only seven sessions have ended before July, and 21 of the 36 special sessions in state history have taken place in that span. And all I'll say about that is I believe I've been in either 15 or 16 of Oregon's 36 special sessions, including the two longest, as well as the famous five special sessions in 2002. Let's not try to impress you with anything. It's just that I've been in over half close to half of Oregon's special sessions. 2003 and 2000 sessions both ran into August, and I remember them only too well. They were not fun. We struggled mightily to try to deal with our business, but we ran into August. If there was a time I thought the August session, particularly in 5 and 3, might go into even beyond Labor Day. We have reached critical mass. The affairs of state have become too complex for the legislature to address by meeting for a few months every other year. As you know, and this has been said over and over and over again, 45 other states have annual sessions. 4 of the other states that still meet biannually are smaller than Oregon. And I was asked earlier today, is West by God Virginia or just Little Rhode Island, do they have biannual sessions? Those are states that are connected with my past. And the answer is no, they meet every year, too. And, of course, Rhode Island and West, by God, Virginia are smaller states than the great state of Oregon. The only state that's bigger than Oregon that has to meet every other year, and you know what state that is, that's the state of Texas. The other states, I believe, you got a Dakota in there, you got a Montana in there, you got a Nevada in there, and I think Wyoming are the states that make up the 5. I believe Arkansas has just become a state. They're the most recent state to decide to meet every year. So there's, and again, I'm not saying to this group of august great lawmakers that we simply meet every year because 45 other states meet every year. But I am pointing out that their legislative assemblies, for better or worse, are meeting every year, at least spending some time in their state capitals dealing with budgets and public policy every year. Oregon legislators are the elected representative of the people, but in 18 months between sessions, the people of Oregon are not being accurately represented in Salem. And I do believe this is true. I made a statement some time ago, and I don't know whether anybody was listening, and I wouldn't blame them if they weren't, that I thought the legislative branch, while the three branches are separate but equal, I did think the legislative branch had reached a point where it was no longer equal to the judiciary or the executive branch of the state of Oregon, although it was separate. I don't believe there's sufficient legislative oversight of state agencies, and I've heard that over and over again, and I happen to believe it's true. The budget matters decided by a small board rather than the lawmakers for across the state, and I happen to be on the E-Board. I have to be on the E-Board because I'm president of the Senate. I attempted not to go on the E-Board, but there was a legislative council drafted somewhat quietly without me knowing it, saying that I had no choice. I'm not, E-Board drives me crazy. I know it exists. We do have it exist, but I'm proud that after the last session in 2007, we have tried to make Ways and Means a permanent committee to meet year-round, and I think that it's more of a reflective way to how to deal with it, as well as to have the legislature as a branch and meet every year to at least make adjustments and to put its stamp as a legislative body on the adjustments to the biannual budget. I'm much more comfortable with dealing with budgetary matters that way, and we can't do that now when we meet every year. Oregon is being governed increasingly by the executive branch, the agency heads, the courts, the initiative process, and yes, even the lobbyists, and I might even say the media, because I think the media is playing a role in how we govern. I'm not going to go into that further. I won't go into polls, but I could say all that. But my point is, when the legislature meets so infrequently, I think that there is this vacuum, and it's being filled by other institutions and other forces and sources that are not the legislature, and I don't think that's in the best interest of the way we govern ourselves, the three branches of government, separate but equal, nor I think it's in the best interest of the people of the state of Oregon. People's legislature is no longer a co-equal branch of government. SJR 41 gives people a way to take back the State House. 2 years ago this month, at the suggestion of the 30-member public commission on the Oregon legislature, lawmakers convened a one-month supplemental session. That was in August of 2008, as you recall. This month, we are back again on SJA 41, asked the people to confirm that they agree that a more modern form of government will help Oregon move forward. Well, SJA 41 calls for us to meet more often. It sets in place limits on the number of days we may meet. General sessions in odd years would be limited, as you know, in terms of the bill before, to 135 days, and the supplemental session in even years would be limited to 45 days. Since 1971, general sessions have averaged 180 days for each 2 years. SJA 41 would not allow us to meet more than 180 days in general session, but would spread the 180 days more evenly over 2 years, allowing us to address the rapidly changing landscape that Oregon faces in our century, the 21st. Again, thank you, Chair Devlin, Vice Chair Ferrioli, Senator Metzger, Senator Atkinson, and Committee Administrator Sealer for allowing me to come here today and enter a written statement as well as a verbal statement on the record regarding my support of SJR 41.
Okay. Any questions for the Senate President?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Mr. President, a couple of items, and I'm glad that you finished your testimony with the 180-day average cut in two. Was there any discussion as this was written about the fact that both of the time limits are set in the bill have us doing a half month here? I'm thinking more in terms of people who come here to rent places to live. Both of these calendar dates have 135 and 45 days, both in sessions in the middle of a month. Is there any discussion of that?
Chair Devlin, Senator Atkinson, there was no discussion in terms of the rental situation. There was discussion in June. A lot of us had thought we'd like to end it in May. I'll be very frank with you, after Memorial Day holiday, but the economic forecast forced us back off that. We did feel the sooner we end it in May, the better for the way Oregonians look at June, look at graduations and things. We really were trying desperately to accommodate, particularly those individuals who had families, younger families, to be frank with you. But I don't recall in my discussions, Senator Atkinson, a discussion along the fact that, you know, you rent for a full month, either then or in middle of March in terms of the even number year. I don't recall that specifically being brought up in any of my discussions. We were simply... We wanted to be faithful to 180. We labored long and hard over it. We didn't want to go all through June. So hopefully we thought about ending it in May, the last day in May, but really thought we were tempting the gods in terms of the economic forecast, as you know, in terms of trying to come in with a final budget package. So that's what drove, as I recall, that's what drove those two specific discussions. We didn't want to go 60 days in that supplemental session. We thought 45 would do it. We like this February the way we've gotten used to February, and then you could go either way, then you've got to go pretty much into some month for at least 2 weeks if you're going to be 45 days. So that's the best I can do, but we did not discuss the rental situation.
A follow-up?
Yes.
A couple follow-ups. Thank you. I'm very excited that there's hard end dates in there with the two-thirds extension for 5 days.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Talk to me a little bit. You made some mention in your remarks about the e-board. Would modernizing the legislature move us towards getting away from the e-board model, do you believe, since we'll be here and we can keep an active ways and means, and perhaps the entire Senate can? One suggestion, where I'm leading is this. I've always believed that the Senate, when we're here for executive appointments, should vote on the budgets that the e-board has approved during the interim, just as a way of oversight. Are we moving to some model like that?
Chair Devlin, Senator Atkinson, if I had my way, we would abolish the e-board if we go to these annual sessions. But is it in statutes? I have to be a little careful, Legislative Council, if you're listening, whether we need at least it to exist in case something happens, you know, some kind of adjustments, should we not be in session. But if I had my way, yes, we would move much more towards a legislative body, which we call it, making budgetary decisions versus this small group of individuals. That would be where I'd like to go. I can't promise you. I'm trying to think of where those discussions went regarding the e-board, as you know, very much in statute, very, very much in statute, how we could eventually move it totally into ways and means process, and then into the annual session. So that's the best I can do with that.
Thank you. And the last thing, I think, to prepare for floor debate, whether it's our committee or proponents of the measure or those of us that might speak on it, is this. I think in the last decade, if we were to total up the average of days that the legislature has been in session, they far exceed 180. And it might be, I think one of the most important points is not necessarily the fact that we would have annual sessions. The most important part is that we'll actually be here less, and we'll be here with more oversight, with hard end dates. And so if we could have that information, at least I'd like to have that information, what the annual regular session mean of meeting dates is in the last decade would be imperative, because we've killed ourselves going past June in the last decade. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Senator.
Just for sake of record, we'll get that for you, but my first session was in 1997. That session ended on July 5th. I've never had a shorter session since. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, yes, you have. You had 2007, Senator Chair. Oh. I may say, Senator Devlin, Chair Devlin, you had 2007, Senator Devlin, you had 2009. I believe they were both, they ended sometime in June. If I may be respectful of your comments, I think you'd have to say that. So at least.
I just, Mr. President, I still just remember those August sessions. They are very much impressed in my memory.
Well, what's much impressed in my memory is when you get into August, Senator Devlin. Your physiology changes.
Your disposition changes also.
You become. Well, I'm not going to get. I'm not going to say what.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we're in danger of getting too much information here.
Okay. Any additional questions for Senator Courtney? Seeing none. Thank you very much, Senator.
I'm going to come here today and testify. I appreciate it very much.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Deborah Boone, I represent the beautiful upper left coast of our state, House District 32, which is the only place to be in August. It gets too hot inland for me. And I'm here to support Senate Joint Resolution 41. I sat on the Public Commission for the and that made this recommendation and supported it in that body too. And Senator Atkinson, you made a comment about the total number of days, and that was one of the reasons I think that it went through that body so well, was it was the same amount of time but spread more equitably with a longer, more substantive policy setting and budget making session, and then the second session in the next year as the sort of, I guess, supplemental, if you will, kind of like Washington State does. And a lot of people on that public commission were not in the in the legislature, and so it was interesting. We had quite a mix of people. That's another story altogether. But a lot of the same issues came up, and Senator Courtney did a wonderful job of giving you all the reasons why we should do this. And I do support it. I think we should. And I get a lot of constituent input on this issue, and it's usually, why don't you meet annually? And I tell them that you might have a chance to vote on this very soon. They would like to see it because they think that state affairs have become pretty complex in the past couple of decades, and we've seen our actions kind of stymied by not being able to come back for 2 years, and I think it's just it makes more sense to do it this way. So I do support it, and I'd like to answer any questions if you have any.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Boone?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Representative, what do you think the best way is for the merits of this to be communicated to the public?
Thank you for the question, Senator Atkinson, Chair Devlin and Senator Atkinson. I think one of the things is a public information program should point out that, you know, in the past, and I think Senator Devlin said for 10 decades or 10 sessions, they have been over the 6 months, except for the last two that we've had, 207 and 209. And in that people are constantly telling us, you know, you need to get your job done and get it done on time and don't waste any money. This is a way we can point out this is using the same amount of time spread over 2 years rather than trying to cram it all into one and then wait 2 years and do it again and do pick up the pieces if we need to 2 years later. Or in our history, what we've done is call special sessions, which then is additional time. So I think it can be couched as using the same amount of time, saving money, and that we wouldn't have to go into special sessions because we would have these opportunities on a set basis, and that we would have a set end time. And I think that's important to people. And then it would take quite an act of Congress, based, so to speak, to extend it. We'd know we'd have a deadline, and we would be working toward it. And I think also just pointing out that the complexity of the issues that we deal with commands more attention, and I think you said yourself, having a little more oversight on the agencies and their activities.
Thank you. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Before you move on to the good senator from Douglas County, Robin has just given me the date from Senate President's office at 191.2 days has been the average in the last decade that we've been here.
Any additional for Representative Boone? Not, thank you very much for coming
thank
here.
Thank you.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Cruz, State Senator, Senate District 1. And let me say on the front end that I'm not necessarily opposed to the concept. The problem is we are not doing this right. And the reason we are not doing this right is we are not looking at enhancing the legislative assembly to the point where we can do our job in defined time frames. Now, Representative Boone mentioned the fact that we could avoid special sessions with this. The states that have defined terms during these economic times have still had special sessions, so I'm not sure that that's anything we can avoid. But you will also notice that those states that have gone to defined annual sessions, one of the things it has done, it has ramped up significantly the amount of work that needs to be done in the interim. And to a large degree, legislators become de facto full-time at that point. And I think if you look at, for example, our legislative fiscal office, it is about one-third the size of the office in the state of Washington. If you look at, you know, if we're going to do this, we have to ramp up all of the support sections that are required to make the legislative assembly effective. We're gonna have to ramp up committee services. We're gonna have to ramp up everything. We're going to have to have more money in our budget so we can have competent full-time staff. And as it is now, during the interim, you can pay minimal for staff. So I think the real issue for me, Mr. Chair, at this point in time is, unless we're willing to talk about putting a legitimate level of assets in the Legislative Assembly to make us once again a co-equal branch of government, which we have not, that is too soon. We go to annual sessions and then we're going to deal with the budget issues. Are we going to give legislators who at that time it becomes more difficult for them to have jobs outside of this process? Are we going to give them a living wage? Because we clearly don't have now. I think there are just a lot of financial issues that need to be addressed before we send this to the people, so the people fully know what the price tag is going to be. And from that perspective, I think it's a good idea, and it's the wrong time in this recession for us to do what we should do, even if we weren't moving to annual sessions, and that is make the Legislative Assembly a co-equal branch of government. I mean, just talking about legislative fiscal office, it's so understaffed that to a large degree, they have to rely on DAS and BAM for all their numbers. They don't have the ability to do anything independent just because they don't have the FTE to do it. And it's not disparaging anybody that works there. It's just that the workload is too large. And we're going to annual sessions. Am I going to have the capacity in my office budget to have the qualified people I need to do all the research that is going to have to take place on the front end of all this stuff? Because if you're going to that defined of a time frame, you're going to have all the work done and have it all vetted before you even get here at the beginning of session. A reference was made to the very long sessions we had. Those very long sessions were very long for political reasons. And they were very. And the main political reason there was, how much money do we give K-12? That was the biggest issue. That issue, there's a way we can settle that issue early. In fact, Senator Atkinson has had a bill in for as long as I can remember him to fund education by the 81st day. It's doable. If we can do a few things to take the politics out of our system and the politics of money out of our system, we can survive the way we're doing it. Now, having said that, the whole interim concept of e-board making a lot of decisions is a really a wrong-headed way to go. I truly believe that. But I would suggest, of the states that are still biennial, the one that I think has the best model right now is the state of Texas. And because they're still biennial, but they have the legislative assembly meet at defined times for short periods of time, relatively similar to the way we have moved our system, where we have all committees meet in a two-day period so that everybody can get together and one committee knows what the other's doing. That was a very positive move the president made. But, Mr. Chair, I just think until, you know, if we're going to send something out to the people, say, let's go to annual session, and we aren't talking about the resources the Legislative Assembly needs to make that happen effectively, we are not being honest with the people. And until until we can do that and say we want to do this and the Legislative Assembly, and it truly does need more assets than we currently give it, and it's going to cost this much more so that the Legislative Assembly can be effective, legislators can be effective, and all of our support areas can be effective. I don't think we're being as honest and open with the public as we need to be, because if we do make this move and the people do accept it, then we'll have to come back on the back end and make those adjustments. I think that should be a front-end discussion.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Any questions for Senator Cruz? Thank you very much
for
coming here this morning. Okay. I'm going to start calling people up. Ms. Eaton and Ms. Lang and Ms. Thompson. Ms. Lang, since you actually, I think, chaired the subcommittee on this issue for the commission, why don't you start off?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Ginny Lang. I'm here today as a member of the Public Commission on the Legislature and the chair of the process committee that made the recommendation on session length, frequency, and timing to the full commission. I also wanted to thank President Courtney for the work that he has done since 2006 when we made this recommendation on moving forward on the commission's recommendations, and for including me as a member of the commission. It was a privilege to work with this group of people. Proposals relating to modifying the session frequency length and or timing have been before the people or before the legislature at least 61 times over the last several decades. And one of the things that the Public Commission felt very strongly about is that they weren't interested in putting in the time and energy and effort to bring forward yet another recommendation that would go nowhere and where there would be no change. And so I would applaud Senator Courtney, President Courtney's work, as well as that of the leaders and the members of both houses in the last couple of biennium to try some different ways of doing the people's business in an effort to perhaps make more lasting changes in the area of frequency, timing, and length of sessions. I'd like to give just a little bit of context for the recommendation. I brought with me the three reports of different commissions over the years. The first recommendation for annual sessions or a change in the length, frequency, or timing was brought by the 1968 Advisory Committee on the Oregon Legislature. Their recommendation was similar to what we have done in the last couple of biennia. That is that there should be a constitutional amendment proposed that would authorize the legislature to call itself into session. That recommendation was made in 1968. The measure was put before the people in May of 1974, ballot measure number 6. It failed. It finally passed in November of 1976. So change doesn't happen quickly here. The 1974 Legislative Improvements Committee, which I had the privilege of staffing, made a recommendation that supported the 1974 ballot measure, and there was a fair amount of disappointment when it didn't pass. The final report of the Legislative Improvements Committee sort of reinforced the notion that the legislature should be given the authority to call itself into session, and also called for annual sessions. Nothing happened. So in 2006, when the Public Commission on the Legislature took up this question, we worked very hard to try to come up with ideas that would perhaps take advantage of the authority that the legislature already did have, and also to acknowledge some principles that the Public Commission took up at one of its first meetings. These ideas were proposed by Dave Frohnmayer, who was a member of the commission as well as a member of my committee. And there were seven in all against which we tried to measure the entirety of our recommendations. But the ones that were applied to the frequency, timing, and length of sessions were these. The reduction of legislative independence and authority due to the increase in influence and impact of state agencies, the lobby, the consequences of ballot measures, and a variety of federal issues. The increasing complexity of the legislature's fiscal and policy tasks, the decline of the citizen legislature, and the need to adapt to the requirements of the 21st century. We also took into consideration a good deal of work that we did on who runs for the legislature, who doesn't, and why. And we tried to fold the discussions that we had with a number of people on that topic into this recommendation. Jim Scherzinger, who was also an advisor to the commission in a variety of different ways, put it well when he commented that the Legislative Assembly is the most important decision-making body in the state, and it needs to have a rational decision-making process. For all of those reasons, we came to the conclusion that the legislature needed to have a way to start making some changes and moving toward an annual session process if the legislators believe that that is what would work best and most effectively for the people of Oregon. So, to that end, we recommended that there be internal deadlines during the odd-numbered sessions beginning in 2007 for committees as well as for sine die, and that in 2008 there be a supplemental or special session limited in time that would be used for the purpose of fiscal issues and compelling policy issues. That was the recommendation made, and it was accepted by the full commission and almost immediately begun to put into place by the leadership and the legislators of this body. As far as SJR 41 is concerned, I'm really not prepared either as a lawyer or a constitutional expert, though we had both on the Public Commission, to comment on the words in the joint resolution. I know you've heard from others who have suggested tweaks to the language and have expressed some concerns about the implications of the wording here on other articles or sections of the Constitution. So I would ask you to, I would urge you to get the words right based on the fact that it has taken us literally over 40 years to get from the recommendation in 1968 from the advisory committee to this point. So please get it right. I would also say that during the even-numbered year, I would pass on a recommendation that I heard a long time ago from a business colleague about being in front of decision-makers or being part of a decision-making body, and that is be bright, be brief, and be gone. As far as the work that you're doing toward an annual session proposal, I would suggest that you be deliberate, be thoughtful, and be collaborative in the way that you get to whatever you put before the people. I'd be happy to respond to any questions about the work of the Public Commission.
We'll go through the full panel and then go to questions. Whoever wants to go first, next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Kathy Eaton, the governance coordinator for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League is a nonpartisan, grassroots political organization that encourages informed citizen participation in government. Testimony was emailed to you, so I'm not going to go over that. I do have a few comments I want to make. Following up on what Pico's discussion, which we followed, I would say that the League of Women Voters first studied the Oregon Constitution in 1961-63 and came up with the position we have to this day, which is that we need annual sessions in order to do the work of the state. And as we've progressed over the last 47 years, we have not changed our opinion. And as technology and the business of the state has increased exponentially, the need for this legislative body and the decision makers of the state on behalf of the citizens of the state needs to be done more frequently. We have discussed before the fact that as individuals, we cannot make our budgets 26 months ahead of time and have a reasonable expectation of what the outcomes will be adopting a budget 26 months ahead of time, if only for fiscal policy and fiscal interests you need to meet annually. There are, we believe, the filling in of the blanks for 135 days and 45 days is a reasonable way in which to divide up the time between the even-numbered years and the odd-numbered years, and that if you can do your work expeditiously in planning for, particularly planning for both kinds of sessions, we believe that the business of the state can be handled more adequately, more efficiently, more effectively with annual sessions. Thank you.
Janice Thompson, head of Common Cause National Organization, with offices in 36 states, now including Oregon again, and organizationally interested in increasing access to the political process and governmental accountability. And I think in this context, really zeroing in on effectiveness. So just four quick points. One is just in general, very, very much support the overall goal of SJR 41, that it's kind of an overdue update. Been talked about, as others have testified, with very helpful details in terms of how long it's been in being discussed. Particularly important to facilitate budgeting, but in general, just there needs that, just shouldn't wait 2 years to address, and I think it is an important factor in shoring up kind of the role of the legislative branch, which has been unfortunately diminished by other factors. I think introducing timelines is a critical element, and the deadlines seem okay. I also noticed the half-month factor that Senator Atkinson noticed and recognized that has implications for, people coming from afar and whatnot, and so, potentially some adjustments there. The third item is that I think the legislature, by following the kind of timelines and suggestions mapped out by PCOL, has just really proven that they can keep to deadlines. And to wrap up then, I think what this means is, since this is something that's going to require a public vote, is that we've you all have paved the way for a sound message to the public that less time overall will be spent and that time will be spent more efficiently over the two-year span.
Any questions for the panel? Yes, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is quite an astute panel. These are all very careful observers of the legislative process. I'd like to preface my question with some observations. The last two legislative special sessions have been billed as trial runs for annual sessions. And at least I, as the minority leader, have observed that in at least one of these special sessions, one of the chambers absolutely prohibited minority reports by rule. Both chambers moved significant pieces of legislation without public hearings. We've gone to one-hour notice literally 5 days after convening, which has the effect of eliminating the possibility for public testimony from ordinary citizens. You know, the lobbyists who are in the building can watch the process carefully, but citizens who are members of interest groups literally need to be on a Minuteman basis to scramble into the building to try to get their issue of record and to add their testimony. And in point of fact, that rarely happens in these special sessions. We've watched the formation of public work groups that have either excluded interested parties, citizens, or excluded members of the minority. And the excuse, of course, is that, we're doing this work in the interim, or we're in a hurry. All three of the panelists testified that limitations in time may be required. But, Mr. Chairman, it's limitations of the number of issues that legislators can uptake by limiting the number of bills, which may be an unconstitutional limitation of free speech, or limitations of drafting capabilities, drafting opportunities. We also have seen this institutionalization of the hurry-up mentality, which I guarantee will increase the probability of unintended consequences. And finally, and I think most tellingly, I haven't seen anything in these two special sessions that increased transparency or accountability or inclusion. In point of fact, it's concentrating power not in the legislative branch, but in the leadership, in the majority party. So I'd like to hear if this august panel believes that we've done anything to deserve the trust of Oregonians during these last two trial runs of the special sessions that would lead up to annual sessions. Do we deserve, by our performance, based on the facts I've observed, to have annual sessions, Mr. Chairman?
Any comments by the committee? Or not the committee, but the panel.
Senator Farioli, Chair Devlin. I was pleased to see that for the short even year session that 30 days was not selected for many of the reasons you mentioned.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Farioli, I would say to you that the process committee spent a considerable amount of time talking about what kind of implications or impact that would have on public participation in general. And there was considerable concern from groups like the League of Women Voters and others, or at least observations about needing to do things differently in order to ensure that people had adequate time to come to the Capitol and weigh in. So whether it's enough or not enough, and whether it's a function of the amount of time or the management style of a committee chair or the leadership, all of those things, I think, probably come into play. We tried to be very restrained in the way we put our recommendation together so as not to be so prescriptive that we would not allow the whoever were the current legislators who might take up this recommendation fashion it in a way that made sense for them. Preserving the flexibility of the legislative body, whether it's today's legislature or that of 10 years from now, is very important, and it's one of the reasons that I would really urge that you work on getting the words right for what you do as far as a constitutional amendment is concerned. All of that said, it really is up to the people who are elected and who come to this building to be the persons who manage and run this process. You can put all of the words in the Constitution and write all the rules that you want, and it won't necessarily fix any of the things that you have brought up.
Senator Ferrioli, Chair Devlin, the League of Women Voters is particularly concerned about access to the legislature, as you know, transparency and the ability for the public to participate. So the issues that you raised are certainly serious ones. However, I would concur with the remarks you just heard that there is some responsibility upon the body to ensure that public access is protected at whatever the number of days is that you have. I wish I had a time machine to get from Eugene to Salem very often, and I'm sure that you have more than that coming from John Day, but or people who come from longer distances. But I think in this era of technology, we do have available to us now the ability to listen and to see audio and visually. If we can't come, we have the ability to send you email, our comments, and I would hope that there would be more ability in the future for people who can do that to come into you from a distance. I know that you do have, when you were having your hearings on appointments, people who could not come could come audially to you. So I think there are ways to work that out, and I would hope that that would not deter you from really seriously considering the fact that you need to meet more regularly than 6 months or so every 2 years. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, follow
up? Yes.
I was very interested in the comment that Ms. Lang made about the 91 opportunities the legislature or the citizens have had to come in on annual sessions. Did I mishear that, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ferrioli, what I said was that proposals related to modifying session frequency, length, and timing had come before the legislature or the people 61 times.
61 times.
In the last, I think, 3 decades.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to, if I might get that after the hearing, I'd like to see where that research comes from. Just a fascinating number of opportunities. And finally, Mr. Chair, an observation. If annual sessions just means that legislatures get to do great evils more often, I don't think that we've deserved the opportunity to have these annual sessions. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything additional?
Yes.
Yes, Senator Atkinson.
Yes.
I defer to Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Atkinson. Ms. Lang, first of all, thank you for your long service on the Public Commission. It was a lot of work, and you did a lot of good work on there. But I wanted to ask you, we have experimented with the notion of a short, even-year session, but we've never really tried out a 135-day session. You know, we managed to get it, I think, down to 170 days during the regular session. And I wanted to find out if you have any concerns about whether we can actually achieve our goals in the odd year session, maintaining the access and the transparency that's so important in a regular session in 135 days. I wonder what kind of research or whatever went into that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Burdick, we didn't spend a lot of time trying to detail exactly how the work would get done based on different time frames. And the reason is that, as I mentioned before, our goal was to preserve as much flexibility for the legislature to shape the recommendation that in a way that would fit them. What I would say is that, as President Courtney mentioned, there are dozens of other states who have been doing work in this way for certainly many, many years. And there are myriad ways that they probably go about that, time deadlines being one, limits on bills in one way or another being another. And so what we assumed is that that kind of research would go on prior to and during the time frames like the last two biennia to determine what kinds of methods could be put in place to help you get through the work.
Thank you, Ms.
Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. Thank you. A question, a comment, and a question, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Lang, for coming. Your phrase, I've been taking a lot of notes here, your phrase, be deliberative, thoughtful, and collaborative, is dead on. First, a historical question. In the other reports that that you were reciting, did the discussion of the e-board come up?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkins, it is always a topic of conversation. And so, yes, it did.
Okay. The comment I have is that over my 12 years here, my opinion on this matter has changed dramatically. And one of the concerns that I have about this particular measure, and I very much appreciate how precise you're being in your words and how precise you are in repeating the phrase, get it right, which I hope to echo on the Senate floor. My concern is that as we sit here as a committee and we're discussing what is a major shift in the balance of power, with all due respect to the six people in the audience, we don't have a very full chamber. And so a hearing room. So my question to you is one of this. Please give us advice, if this bill moves forward, that this bill will not fail. What would it take? And one of the notes I have to myself in helping answer your question is, the community of the legislature.
Here they come.
Oh, those are for me. Actually, those are for me. Pause. I think they were supposed to meet me, and now they're here.
Okay. Why don't you interrupt yourself, Senator Atkinson, and introduce them? So.
Well, I'm not.
Okay. We can hold off on that.
Thank you. I do think there's some cookie sales involved in our guests. Thank you. Thank you for coming today. This is the Rules Committee. And Senator Devlin will buy any cookies that you want. He's got all the money.
Please proceed.
Back to my question. I've wrote a note here to myself saying the community of the legislature, and when I say the community of the legislature, it's this building We have professional lobby, we have media, we have citizens groups, etc. The other two branches of government, which are the executive and the judicial, and the citizens from around the state have to support this. And so what I'm concerned about is that if we, as we go forward, the legislature is going to go out there by itself as politicians doing something that might appear to be self-serving. I don't believe it is, but it might appear to be self-serving. And we lose again, and then this thing never comes forward. Give us some advice of pitfalls from your perspective to avoid.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, I am not prepared to give you that advice today, but I would be happy to think about it, and if it were useful to perhaps reconvene some members of the public commission and put some ideas together that might be of use to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything additional? Thank you very much for coming here today. Oh, Senator Metzger.
No, just an observation, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate some of the comments that were made today, and certainly would agree about the number of concerns. I would point out, though, that this resolution itself is a permissive piece of legislation in the Constitution that allows for the annual session. As what should be in a Constitution, as this is, it is broad. It does not specify how it should operate, what is proper or improper, but simply allows a legislative assembly to put into statute and leadership to put into rule how those sessions will be operated. It is best, as many people have said in the past, that you don't be very specific in the Constitution, although a lot of people like to do that, and then we get into trouble. The comments of how we operate is really up to the body itself, and as Ms. Lang has pointed out, even if you tried to write that type of specificity into the Constitution, it would not change the behavior of those in the Legislative Assembly should they not wish to behave that way. I'm very concerned about transparency, very concerned about access, but you can't constitutionally guarantee that. It's we do that in our statutes, but more importantly, we do it in the rules of the Senate and the rules of the House, and we do it in the views and the execution of leadership at any given session as to how that takes place. Certainly under the status quo, we have seen that take place, less transparency, many, many times, and we're not protected by the status quo. Ms. Lang may remember this. I know one longtime member of this body, has not been in the body for a long time, used to kid about how at least one committee chair used to have his committee meetings in his office with a tape recorder all by himself hitting a gavel as if that was actually conducting the hearing, and that's what used to happen, and that was accepted at that time. I recall my first session, 1999, under the status quo. We talk about transparency, no public hearings, a very famous picture that most of my colleagues should remember of the Speaker of the House and the Senate President in 1999 peering out of a doorway as they were cutting all kinds of deals all by themselves to end the session in which there was no public input. So it is not the, you know, the constitutional permission that gives us direction. It is the it is the direction, the will, and the, I would say, the leadership of this body that will determine the quality of how we deal with it. My only final observation would be, I do remember, I think it was 227 days when we were, in 2001, we were the last legislature to get out of here. And as a college professor once told me, you know, being long never made you better, and that was certainly a perfect example. I've also learned through the years that, if also as a result of a college experience, Mr. Chair, is that if I had a college paper due 3 weeks from tomorrow, I would write it 3 weeks from tonight. So it is how you use that time, not the length of time. And I think this is this permissive piece before the voters will give the legislature an opportunity to show itself as an equal branch of government, and would hope that future legislative assemblies and their leadership would use that tool to increase transparency and to make sure there was access.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. We need to go into the work sessions here fairly shortly, but I'm going to bring Mr. Johnson up, Legislative Council, to address an issue that Senator Farioli had regarding the Armada issue and the constitutional amendment. I've also requested this, though I don't believe it's ready yet to be in writing. So,
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. Dexter Johnson, Legislative Council. Let me first answer that. It actually is the first time hearing of the request, so okay. It is not in writing
okay. At
this point, but I'll be happy to put it in writing.
The question before you, at least as I understand it, and Senator Farioli can correct me if I'm wrong, is as structured, does the constitutional amendment, including the amendment to what we're proposing, does it present an Armada issue? And for the sake of the audience, the issue of an Armada issue is for a constitutional amendment, we can only put one subject before the voters in the Constitution. If we put more than one subject in one measure, it becomes a constitutional revision and requires a supermajority in order to pass.
Right. Mr. Chair and members, that is essentially what the Armada decision decided. It's a slightly different than the single subject rule, perhaps even a little bit more restrictive. It is essentially a requirement that voters be presented with separate amendments if there is a separate change in the Constitution being considered. That's the essentially the test, and it's not a form over substance requirement. However, it's really a substance thing. You look to see if there is separate substantive changes being made, and if there are separate substantive changes being made, then Armada and the cases that follow it require that they be presented to voters separately. In this case, both SJR 41 as the printed bill and the -7 amendments added into the bill do not, in my opinion, create the need for separate amendments. Let's turn first to SJR 41 as printed. There is on the first page, the first section is the change being presented. That is to say that the legislature would be required to meet annually in a limited number of periods without there being authorization from the legislature to extend those periods. And then there is, throughout the rest of the resolution, a series of very small amendments to a bunch of other sections of the Constitution. And those amendments are designed, in fact, to preserve the status quo. And they all essentially say the same thing, that wherever elsewhere in the Constitution there's a reference to a regular session, because this change is to basically make the regular session occur each year, to clarify that those other provisions only apply, the reference to regular session means the odd-numbered year regular session. So they are preserving the status quo. So, for example, Section 3, which you see on lines 21, 28 of the first page and the first 16 lines of the second page, that is the section of the Constitution that creates the emergency board. And the only change you're making there is where it says that the term of the emergency board is until the adjournment of from the adjournment of the regular session to the organization of the next regular session that you are ensuring that it's the odd-numbered year regular session. So it's basically the same procedure as there currently is. And there are other examples of that throughout the printed resolution. Okay, so if I may turn then to the dash 7 amendments, which essentially what the dash 7 amendments, they insert the number of days and direct which election this goes to. But the big change in the dash 7 amendments is the concept of an organizational session. And that is to say, the organizational session is something that allows the legislature to, before the regular session begins, convene for very limited purposes. Now, the Constitution, as it currently is written, requires new members of the legislature who are voted on in the general election, it sets their term as beginning on the second Monday in January. That's an existing provision. Other existing provisions in the Constitution require members who have been elected to be credentialed before they are sworn in. And credentialing is an internal process of the body that where they look at the make sure that the proposed members have met the qualifications to be members, and then they are sworn in. Those are in existing provisions of the Constitution as well. And this simply ensures that the legislature can do that by the second Monday in January or on the second Monday in January and adopt rules which are also required under the Constitution. That they do that before the regular session begins. And that, too, is essentially something that preserves the status quo of the existing constitutional scheme rather than a new substantive change. And that's why I conclude that a separate vote is not required.
Okay. Questions from Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question. Or two, or three. I'll say three questions, Mr. Chairman, because that's what is presented by this SJR 41. The first question is annual sessions. And the second question is of limited duration. And the third question is with an organizational session. So I see these three questions being asked. And I think that, as a layperson, it seems to me obvious that that would be an Armada question. And because it seems obvious to me that that would be the case, it would seem expedient to me to use perhaps the higher bar to frame the question, which is put this into a format that requires slightly more votes to get it across the floor, but at least won't encourage folks to litigate, which would be a huge waste of time and energy and state resources. So, you know, when you conclude one way, if you're wrong or if you're right, doesn't matter, you're still going to possibly face a legal challenge. If you do it perhaps with the bar set slightly higher, you can still accomplish the objective. But the at least the question goes without so much process before the people. So, the question of whether or not the opinion's correct or incorrect, I think, is less important than what's the outcome that you're aiming at, and that's to lay the question before the people. If you can do that one way without engendering litigation, why wouldn't you do that? So maybe that's a question for the chair as much as it is for a learned counsel. But I see three questions here.
Mr. Chair,
please. Yes.
Okay. The organization, whether the organizational session is a separate question or not, I think I've answered that. I believe it's required to order not to change the existing other constitutional requirements, namely that legislators take office the second Monday in January and that they be credentialed first before taking office. The question of whether annual session and limited days are separate, they are perhaps different issues, but Armada does not require, in my opinion, a separate vote if the issues are closely related and can be said to be a single concept. And I think the limited days and annual sessions are closely related enough so that there is no requirement that they be voted on separately under the Constitution. Senator Farrelly, you are correct, however, that a way to ensure that this could not even be brought up in court would be to treat this as a revision, that requires a two-thirds vote. And that would ensure that there could not be litigation on this ground, but my conclusion is that it is not legally required.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
That's just an observation and then a question, the follow-up question on the organizational session.
Yes.
I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. It seems that there's never time to do it right. There's always time to do it over. So even though the bar is a little higher, you might want to think about doing it right so you don't have to go through the hoops of litigation to find out whether you did it right or not, and then possibly have to do it over. In the organizational session, I assume we'd limit our activities by rule. Is that your understanding, Mr. Chairman?
Can we clarify something for the we have clarified something in the organizational session is that we will not consider vetoes from the previous session. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And Mr. Chair and Senator Farrelly, there are limits in the text of this on what can be done in the organizational session.
Okay.
You could further limit that by rule, but okay. One of the things that you would need to do, because rules don't carry forward from one legislature to the next, would be to adopt those rules.
And Mr. Chairman, would we adopt rules in the organizational pre-session?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, yes, that's one of the, you'll see on line 9 of the amendment, it references sections 11 and 12 of the Constitution, and rules are referenced in those sections.
And, Mr. Chairman, could we hold a public hearing?
No, not within the session itself.
So we would not be holding public hearings on the rules adoption?
Yes. Technically, on the rules adoption, I thought your question was broader.
Well, it is broader, Mr. Chairman. I don't know how you hold a public hearing on one subject but eliminate all consideration of every other subject.
Can you respond?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, I believe the process for adopting rules is that a special committee is created right at the beginning, and the rules are first considered by that committee. And the authority for that is what's called custom and practice, which also under Mason's manual and similar legislative rules take a higher precedence than otherwise. And so for the limited purpose of adopting rules, a special committee could be created and would be created to consider those rules and propose them to the body as a whole.
And, Mr. Chairman, that committee would hold a work session and take a vote?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess the question for me is, other than specifically limiting the body to its consideration of veto by prohibiting that consideration, if you're holding public hearings and work sessions, it seems to me that it'd be very difficult to limit the opportunities or, if you will, the rights of a legislator to legislate if you're in session. I mean, we have one form of speech and action as legislators, one only, and that's to legislate. So the question of limiting that function to me seems one that is litigable. So I'd be interested. And I don't need the answer now. Mr. Johnson and I can discuss that offline.
I have a suggestion, Senator Farrelly, if you would like to indulge me.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Isn't it true that another sure way around Armada would be simply to say the legislature will meet every year period and to set any limitations by statute?
Mr. Chair and Senator Burdick, yes, that would be a way to do that. You still probably would need the other conforming amendments that you find in SJR 41 in the printed bill.
Those aren't the same kind of the same level of question as setting time limits and setting an organizational session. Is that correct? I mean, isn't that pretty typical of any constitutional amendment that it has to have conforming amendments?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, it often does. Because the Constitution does prescribe the term of legislators as beginning the second Monday in January, you would not ordinarily be free to choose some other date. I mean, you'd run into some real difficulties, practical difficulties, if you have a bunch of newly elected legislators who have not been credentialed, which the Constitution also requires, but whose term is supposed to begin on a certain day. There's a problem there that you would need to address.
Okay. Anything additional? If not, thank you very much. I will close the public hearing, and we're going to proceed through a series of work sessions. I'm going to start, just for sake of just memory, basically going to the measure that we have just closed the public hearing on, or that I have. Okay, I'm opening a work session on SJR 41. Do we have a motion to adopt the -7 amendments?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move the -7 amendment to SJR 41.
Okay. Senator Burdick has moved the -7 amendments. Any comments?
I'll be a no, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any objections? Please note that Senator Farioli objects. Motion passes. Do we have a motion to pass as amended?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move SJR 41 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Burdick has moved SJR 41 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments?
Comment, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I think that there are significant questions, not the least of which is an Armada question that attends this issue. So just let it be noted for the record that I think we're going to end up going around and around on this issue, and eventually we'll conclude that it needs to be a constitutional revision. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Would the committee assistant please call the roll?
Senator Atkinson?
Yes.
Senator Burdick?
Yes.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. Okay. Close that work session. Open a work session.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. For the record?
For the record?
Yes.
I'm a sucker.
For a good cause.
I can't say no.
Yeah.
Okay. I will open a work session on SB 998. Let's go to my cheat sheet. Do we have a motion to adopt the -11 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, I move the -11 amendments.
Senator Farioli has moved the -11 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. Is there a motion to move the bill to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farioli has moved the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections to the motion? Seeing no objections to the motion, motion passes. Senate Bill 1043. I will open a work session.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 1043 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Farioli has moved SB 1043 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, motion passes. Final SJR 44A. On SJR 44A, is there a motion to the floor with the adopted recommendation? There are no amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be opposing this
yes.
bill.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I move Senate Joint Resolution 44A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation for 44A. Any discussion? Not to actually steal Senator Farioli's thunder, but my understanding is that they have a minority report that they want to offer, and an SDR is too inviting. Is that a fair?
Mr. Chairman, the underlying principle of saving money is a good one, Mr. Chairman. But the open-ended nature of a Senate joint resolution makes it too attractive a target.
Well, at least he's honest, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So, any additional discussion? Okay, would the committee assistant please call the roll, Mr. Riley?
Senator Atkinson?
No.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Farioli?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The vice chair serves notice on the chairman of the
possible minority
possibility report. Of the filing of a minority report.
Thank you very much, Senator Farioli.
And then let it be noted for the record, it's 5 minutes after 10.
Okay.
Clock's ticking.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I would amend the previous notice by inserting the word strong before possibility.
So noted. Senator Metzger, would you carry 998?
Sure.
It's the omnibus. Senator Farioli, will you carry 1043? And I will comment on the floor also so it's known that it's a bipartisan bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
I will carry SDR 44A. I guess Senator Farioli will decide who carries the minority report.
And Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
What's your intention on SJR 48?
48 is to have a discussion with committee members and to basically see if we can move that bill.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's objection to that bill.
I know.
Okay.
It did not get caught up in this chamber last time, so we might just move it again. And on SJR 41, I will ask Senator Courtney if he will carry and I will co-carry. If he will not co-carry, I will look for another co-carrier. And with that, it should be everything.
It is.
Anything else for the good of the order? If not, we adjourn. You can listen.